Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Georgia, Florida line. I hope that things are going well with everyone. I hope you're having a great weekend. We got some rain through here this weekend. We also had a few winds to come through with the storm. I hope that anyone that was impacted by the storms are doing a lot better, and hopefully there wasn't too much, you know, too terrible on too many different people. But we did have some severe weather in this area, in our region, and we're in that season. It's something that I talk about almost every Sunday, that we are reaching that period where, you know, the summer storms are beginning to kick in, and they're starting a little bit earlier than what they normally do. So just want to make sure that we are extremely careful with that. Also want to continue to encourage people to the coronavirus is still out there. So let's still socially distance. Let's make sure we wear our mask. Let's make sure we can do whatever we can do to bring this thing to an end, so that we can hopefully enjoy the full blown summer and some fall football. I don't know about many of you, but I'm ready for some football, high school football, college football, whatever it may be. I'm just ready to see some of it, because I tell you, an entire year off from everything, oh man, we have missed so much. We got some birthday parties to throw, we got some cookouts to throw, we got a lot of things to do, and so we need to, you know, work together to get everything in order so that we can do that. This past week was a very historic week in America. For those of you that were watching the TV coverage, of course, you had the trial of Derek Chauvin, who was the police officer that is now convicted of the murder of George Floyd. And it even feels weird saying that he was convicted, but he was on three counts. As a matter of fact, all three came back with guilty from the jury. And for many people, that was a very different moment. Many folks struggled with how they felt about it. Many people are continuing to process it as they think about it. And I kind of wanted to discuss that today on the radio show, particularly from a younger activist and younger black male perspective. So I am excited to have with me today two of my great friends that are going to have this conversation with me about what did the Derek Chauvin conviction mean for us individually and for us as a society, and what it meant for America. And of course, we continue to pray for George Floyd's family, for his daughter. For almost 2 weeks, his family had to constantly watch on TV as they replayed over and over and over and over Officer Derek Chauvin placing his knee on the neck of George Floyd while he was in handcuffs on the ground, not restricting, not fighting, in full compliance, yet he got no relief. As people looked on, as an off-duty firefighter looked on, as children, young folks looked on, this happened on the street, out in public, with no regards. And his family had to live through that. I think his brother said on one of the TV shows that every time he saw that video, he was experiencing the emotions of his brother dying again. Just imagine that. Just imagine that. But let's talk about that. I'm certainly happy to have with me today Demetrius McBride, who is the vice president of the Urban League Young Professionals here in Columbus, Georgia. And we also have Dominic Perkins, a good friend of mine, who recently served as the state political director for the Joe Biden presidential campaign for Georgia. And so, gentlemen, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Thank you, Teddy. It's been great to be here.
Absolutely. Demetrius, I want to start with you. When you first got the news that Officer Derek Chauvin had been found guilty of all three charges with the trial, with his murder trial for the murder of George Floyd, how did you feel?
I felt, when I first got the news, I felt a sense of somewhat relief watching the trial play out those whole 2 weeks. There was just a bit of doubt that, you know, the jury may find some reasonable doubt, that the defense may have done just enough. So my first initial emotion was relief. But then it was quickly followed by, it's not enough. Clearly, as we've seen played out, since this case has been on trial, there have been more officer-involved slaying. And I know we have the George Floyd Police Act sitting in Congress just waiting. There needs to be next steps followed up in policy to hold officers accountable.
You're absolutely right. I 100% agree with you. And, you know, Demetrius, that's always a tough subject because I know you, just like me, we have friends that are in law enforcement. One of my good mentors and a good friend of mine, Sheriff Greg Countryman, you know, I struggle for my friends in law enforcement, especially those that go to work every day with the intention to do the best job, to hold their oath up to the highest level of responsibility, but that are also a part of the classification of people that are constantly feeling like they're being let down by the justice system, or that injustice to them are being overlooked. Now Dominic, I know you looked at this probably through a lot of different lens. I mean, you know, your father is an African-American male and your mother is German, in which a lot of people would classify her as a Caucasian woman. So you look at it through two perspectives, but I know you were primarily, I'll let you talk. Tell me how you felt about that as an individual.
Okay. So I felt, just kind of watching the case and then waiting on the verdict. I think my emotions were kind of up and down about it. So I was thinking there was, you know, kind of worry, some doubt. I admit that a piece of me was surprised about the verdict. We see off with like this, when there's clearly something wrong has happened. It was so clear to me, and clear to a lot of people all over the country, that what happened to George Floyd was illegal or wrong. But there have been instances in the past where, for whatever reason, ultimately, you know, did not do the right thing. I think the case of Walter Scott, we all saw, was horribly shot down as he ran away, and there was a member of the jury who said he did not in good conscience consider the verdict, when it was clear as day that Walter was down. So it was a mix of so many different emotions, just, you know, watching all of this. But there was also knowing that George Floyd, you know, would ultimately see that his murder was found guilty. So it was just an emotionally trying few weeks watch the case and see that video, watching the trial and seeing that video going over George Floyd and people who are watching this begging life. So. It was a range of different emotions for me because George Floyd, I think any of us could be on that call. Any of us who are on now, who are on the show now, you know, we could have been George Floyd if we came across the wrong call. So. officer. So it tugged at it as if it was difficult.
It was absolutely difficult. Dominic, you know, you're absolutely right. I think that it could have definitely been any of us. And I think something that you pointed out to me or earlier just a few minutes ago in your comments, for me, that was a big thing. And that was, I think this was another one of those situations where the masses were absolutely confident that George Floyd had been murdered. And usually you see that level of consensus in the community demonstrations. People all over this country came out in large numbers, large, diverse numbers. We're not just talking about black people. We're talking about white folks. We're talking about Asian folks. We're talking about Latino folks. All of them came out because anyone who watched that video with the heart, with the conscience, saw that something terribly wrong had happened. And they knew that this man's life had been unnecessarily taken. But Dominic, as you stated, we've seen that in the past. And we didn't get the results that people thought that we should get. So what particular about this particular incident and this trial that you think helped push the guilty verdict on over the line?
I think it was the video, just having that full video showing everything that happened, and then how he so, it was clear in the video, like any time, you know, this was a grown man calling out to his mother. And when you hear a child calling out for their mother, that's something serious. But to hear a grown man do it and to give up, and, you know, he had given up. He was not fighting. And it just continued. And I think it just got to a point where, you know, just watching that video and watching George Floyd, you know, really struggle for his life, I think a lot of people realize, like, this has gone on too far. This is enough. It's too much. And I think a lot of people, you know, watched that and felt that way. And the way the protest and the response after his death really just gripped the country and galvanized people, you know, really all over the country. I don't think anybody could miss that. Like, it touched everybody in one way or another, whether you agreed or disagreed. You were aware of what was going on and why it was happening. And so I think that's a large part of it. But there was no, you know, I saw the defense try to explain Derek Chauvin's behavior away, but I recall the prosecution saying, believe what you saw with your eyes. And to me, that was so important. That was critical because you saw it with your own eyes. You saw what happened. And they were, you know, told to believe it. Now, I will say, I think the other part of it, aside from just kind of the human aspect and how we were all impacted, is, you know, you can't downplay the fact that the Attorney General, you know, the role of, you know, progressive Attorney General, people like Keith Ellison, you know, who was involved in this. So I would say both of those things had a huge impact.
Absolutely. And you know, and to hear him crying for his mother, and it's to my understanding she wasn't even out there. You know, it showed his mental state and his level. It just shows so much, you know, and it touched you so deeply because as a child growing up, one of the early things that a baby learns to do is to call for their mother. And when you think of a baby, you think of someone in their most fragile, vulnerable, and helpless state. And that's where he was, Demetrius, under the knee of that officer. He wasn't a threat. He wasn't resisting. He wasn't fighting. He was simply asking this officer to allow him to breathe. That position on his neck with his knee by that officer wasn't even necessary. It wasn't even necessary. And that's the part that I think disturbs a lot of people. Demetrius, young folks all over this country after that incident took to the street, engaged in social justice, engaged in becoming change agents. And I know you did a lot of work with that, even with the Urban League, when we had our big march here in Columbus. You know, you guys gave people water along the route, and you did so many other things in regards to this. Do you think we see a new generation of younger leaders being socially engaged and proactive and seeking change and policy change and law change like we did during Martin Luther King's era of him actually working to change America on the ground?
Absolutely. Locally, statewide, and even nationally, with the likes of people like Tamika Mallory, it's time for change. It's been time for change. One thing about this younger generation, my generation, and the generation that's coming after me, is knowing our history and understanding how it's starting to repeat itself. We want to make sure we're that change agent, so that the future generations don't have to go through the same systemic issues, which is, you made a valid point in stating that we hit the streets, we were marching, but more importantly, we're also trying to pass policy, we're trying to change laws. And as we hit the streets, we see the resistance. Right here in our own state of Georgia, just with the voting rights that were recently passed, voting laws are recently passed. Other states are trying to amend voting rights. As I mentioned earlier, the Justice and Policing Act sitting in Congress. We need laws to change. We need to be civically engaged, and more importantly, we need to hold our elected officials accountable on a local, state, and national level to make sure that those changes come about. We can march in the streets all day, but if laws aren't changed that are for the people, then we're going to be doomed to repeat this for my children's generation, which will be a shame.
You know, Demetrius, I think you just brought up a very good point. I just want to touch on that a little bit more. And Dominic said earlier, too, we've seen the change happen at the district attorney level. District attorneys all across this nation have been removed from their seats and replaced by district attorneys that will no longer tolerate this foolishness, the inaction of some of them to even bring charges in situations where charges were more than warranted. Their lackluster attempt at an indictment in front of a grand jury, when just about anyone in the legal field knows you can indict a ham sandwich if you want to. It's all about the way you present it, how you present it, and your intent when you present it. You know, I have always felt that our justice system is one of the best in the world. However, it's only as good as the people that participate. We're talking about the judges. We're talking about the prosecutors. We're talking about the attorneys. We're talking about the staff, and we're talking about the jury. It's only as good as the people that participate. Demetrius, my question to you is, seeing the success that the younger generation has helped garner behind changing DAs, which instantly impact the judicial process in situations like an officer-involved shooting, Do you think there's a possibility that that same understanding may flow to the younger generation on the importance of voting on people like city council members who can hire and fire a police chief, or the mayor who can engage and lead the public safety program for your city, or your state representative or your state senator who can get engaged in state level laws, or at least submit or try to propose or bring a bill or something that impact these areas? Do you think that the younger generation is going to gravitate to that area?
I believe so. I think we're swiftly learning, especially in this past election cycle, that it's, in order to create change, it's bigger than coming once every 4 years. We have to pay attention to local and state elections. Every 2 years, we have to be involved in the process. And by being involved in the process, it does not mean simply voting, but it means being actively educated and intentionally engaged in the process, rather than trying to get on the committee or be on the full committee to help write policy if that's running for office. I do believe this generation realizes the importance of local elections to see the change that they want to see, to be the change they want to see.
Dominic, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? You know, there are some people that believe historically we've had a tendency to celebrate small victories too long, that we wait too late to get back in the game and we lose the momentum of something that has happened that has really brought highlight to things that we think have challenged us in our community. How long do we get to sit back and celebrate this verdict before it's time for us to get to work? And what are some of the things we need to do next, Dominic?
Yeah. Well, I think when it comes to the verdict and other verdicts, I think what we have to do is I wouldn't say so much celebrate, but I think it's a time to both reflect on what's happened, but also reflect on what we can do moving forward to try to prevent these types of injustices from happening again. Because I think what we all saw was, you know, George Floyd's family received justice in this case, but I think true justice or being truly right is George Floyd would be alive and would be with his family right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important for all of us to do a few things, one of which is engage in larger conversations about what policing looks like in our communities. One of the things we see so often in communities where these horrible shootings take place is things like over-policing, particularly over-policing of black and brown people. So having conversations about what we do to prevent the types of things and, what type of policing program and what type of policing programs take place in our specific communities. And I think it's important to say our specific community, because what works in, Atlanta may not work in Columbus. What works in Columbus may not work in Macon. So we have to, engage in those conversations about what policing looks like where we all live. I think the other thing is though there are different approaches that need to take place in different communities in which we all live, I think there are some things that are pretty standard that should not be taking place. Having conversations about, chokeholds and, other control measures that restrict people's breathing and, stopping those types of things. Also having conversations about the militarization of police. I know one controversial topic is, we see a lot in the news and things like that, is discussions about defunding the police, which I'm not, advocating for that one way or the other, but I'm saying all of those things are conversations that are taking place And so people need to take time to reflect on those things. Or also investing in other programs. I've seen a little bit about some programs that are being looked at here, you know, in relation to the uptick in violence and shootings and murders that we've seen in our community, to, you know, address violence and other systemic issues that oftentimes lead to crime in certain communities. So those are all conversations that we need to have. Particularly in Columbus, where we're all at, but in a lot of other communities as well. But I think beyond that, it's also extremely important that there be action after those conversations. So not just talking for the sake of talking, but talking with a purpose and acting on those conversations.
Oh, absolutely.
I think is critical, and doing it as soon as we can is important.
100% agree with that. And Demetrius Dominic brings up a great point about the local crime that we're seeing. I think right now we're on the 26th homicide of the year here in Columbus, and we're in the fourth month of the year. And so that's a very high pace of crime. But, you know, you don't fix that issue, Demetrius, by just, you know, speaking from a podium or, you know, putting a program in the community. There's so much more that needs to be done. You know, like I present to you today that 21% of Columbus lives in poverty. You know, look, drive through some of these neighborhoods and look how they've been neglected. You know, trees growing everywhere, bushes everywhere, trash everywhere, boarded up windows, you know, drug houses and trap houses and all other kind of houses, you know, that just disturbs and destroy the neighborhood. And I guess my point is correcting some of these issues are more of a comprehensive approach and not a one size fit all type solution. Demetrius, from a younger perspective, what should we be doing, or what message should we be delivering to our younger generation to stop some of the black on black crime that we see here in this area?
You make a very good point, and we don't want to get caught up in what I believe is called broken window policing, but rather we want to look at it holistically, that we need to support each other as a community, from economics to education to reforming some things in our community to build the community back up. Rome was not built in a day. So it's going to take time to get to where we want to see our communities to be. However, when it comes to the question of what is the message, what do we need to hear, the message is that we need to care for each other. That somewhere along the line in our passing of time, the community seems to have lost a sense of care. And I know, I'm pretty sure you all can remember where an individual that stayed down the street looked out for other individuals. If I got in trouble, it wasn't just my parents getting on to me. It was also my neighbor and my grandmother and the community looked out for each other. And somewhere along the line, we become very individualistic. But we have to bring back that care and concern for our community. We have to start loving on one another holistically, to mean spiritually, economically, and education as well. So let everyone in the community know that we need each other in order to move on and to grow past this phase we're currently in.
Absolutely. Well, Demetrius McBride and Dominic Perkins, I want to thank you guys again for coming on and for joining me today for this conversation. You two are without a doubt two of the greatest young leaders that we have in our region. You've proven that you care about this community. You stand up for this community. You speak out for this community. However, you've never hesitated to speak the truth about this community. And that is extremely appreciate it, especially as we think about Columbus in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. The next 20 years, what would things look like? Where would we be? what would we have done? And will we look back and will we say in 2021, we had an opportunity to make some change? In 2022, with the elections that we have coming up, we had an opportunity to make some change, to put Columbus on a different path, but yet we chose the same. What will we choose? Again, I want to say we're praying for the family of George Floyd. He was kneeled on by Officer Derek Chauvin on his neck for over 9 minutes. 9 minutes for weight and pressure on his neck. And today, Columbus, Georgia, the United States, the entire world celebrates that his life, though taken extremely early, justice will be served for it. Justice has been served. The jury has spoken, and David Chauvin was guilty of all three counts for his acts against George Floyd on that day. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. I ask that you continue to stand the fight. I ask all of you that we continue to pray, that we continue to march forward, that we move forward with bravery, that we move forward with courage, that we move forward with conviction, that we move forward with love in our hearts as we look to take our community to another level, to change things, to make things better for the young folks that will follow us in just a few years. I look forward to you joining me again next Sunday. Take care.
Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and this radio program are not to be considered necessarily the belief of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversations? Send us an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.